You are tuned into 2SER 107.3, and my name is Andrew Popel. Every week, it is my pleasure to bring you fascinating books, writing, and literary culture. And we have been having an amazing run of great Australian writing this year. That's going to continue today because I am joined by Michael Muhammad Ahmed. You have met Muhammad on the show before. He is the director of Sweatshop, the Western Sydney Writers Collective. He wrote The Tribe, a fascinating collection of stories. And today we are discussing his new book, The Lebs. The Lebs tells the story of Barney Adam. Barney is growing up attending Punchbowl Boys High School in the late 90s. If you are from Sydney, as so many of you listeners I'm sure are, you'll remember that around the 90s, it was not a good time to be a young Lebanese male. There was a demonization following the SCAF gang rape trial. And then come 2001, every young Lebanese man became a suspected terrorist in the eyes of the public. Muhammad explores what it means to grow up in that time and creates a fascinating and multifaceted portrait of a young man in Sydney. This is what writing should be, and this is what we need in our city, in our world. I'm going to be joined by Michael Muhammad Ahmed in the studio. I invite you to listen. This is a fantastic chat, and it's coming up after just this very short break here on 2SER 107.3.
Who holds power? Has it been abused and misused? Why? From April 30 to May 6, the world's most exciting writers will explore power at Sydney Writers Festival. Don't miss Call Me By Your Name author Andre Asiman, award-winning novelist Min Jin Lee, iconic poet Eileen Miles, Pulitzer Prize winner Juno Diaz, and Helen Garner. Tickets on sale now at swf.org.au. Sydney Writers Festival sponsors 2SER 107.3.
Good morning. You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. This is Final Draft, and I'm your host, Andrew Popel. Barney Adam studies at Punchbowl Boys High. In fact, as far as he's concerned, he's just about the only one who studies there. Barney's Lebanese and Lebs rule the school, but he also dreams of becoming a writer, and that's not something his friends are going to understand. Now, that is the story we are talking about today, and I am joined by Michael Muhammad Ahmed. You've met Muhammad before on Final Draft when we discussed his collection, The Tribe, which was adapted for the stage. He's also the founder and director of Sweatshop, the Western Sydney Writers Collective, and we're going to be talking about his latest novel, The Lebs. It has absolutely made my job of presenting engaging and brilliant writing every week on Final Draft just that little bit easier, and I want to thank you, Muhammad, for joining me here in the studio.
Thank you for having me, and also let me start by saying Assalamu Alaikum, which in the language of my ancestors means peace be upon you. I wish you peace and also all the listeners tuning in.
And I am just, look, I'm excited. When I heard about The Lebs, I was stunned when I read it, so I'm really excited to kind of get into it with you. Can we start with expectations? Home, school, friends, love. I think everyone listening will relate to the notion that these expectations pull at you, even divide you when you're at school. What Barney experiences is different, though. He knows that to white people, he has the face of a rapist, and it tears him because he wants to be himself, not a grotesque caricature of being Lebanese. I got the sense, though, that there's no resolution for Barney. Nothing that our society offers, or in the Lebs, we're actually going back to the late 90s, there's nothing that society offers that will allow him to be all the things that he wants.
Well, I think the story is about Barney learning to love himself. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right that the society won't let him be all the things that he wants, but to be completely blunt about it, a lot of the things he wants are developed because of his self-hate. And so the things he wants are, to me, as an educated writer who was being conscious in the way I produce the work, the things Barney wants are stupid a lot of the time. And what ultimately he discovers is that being a Leb is beautiful.
I loved Barney, but I had these moments, and I've written the word contradictions here, I've written the word inconsistencies. Throughout school, Barney struggles with these things. He feels like the contradictions and inconsistencies between his faith and his friends' behaviour. It's later challenged by his work with Bankstown Theatre Company. each time he's challenged, he's magnanimous enough to question his own understanding and not simply dismiss these challenging views. I really like that. At first, when I saw him doing this, I was like, this is a very ideal mindset. But later on, you also challenged me with the idea, and Banny outright states, that he might be doing this out of fear. Is he being open? Is he fearful? Is it both?
Well, firstly, let's set up the context of this discussion, and then we'll talk about contradiction. The book is set in the late 90s, and it's set in a real place, Punchbowl Boys High School, which is the high school that I went to. And the majority of the students at that school are from Arab-Australian Muslim backgrounds, which I, in the book, call LEBs for shorthand, which is a term that we were throwing around interchangeably with things like Middle Eastern, Arab and Muslim. Now, it just so happens that for any young LEB growing up in the western suburbs of Sydney between the years 1998 and 2005, you're going to be a little bit unlucky, because that's when the SCAF gang rapes took place in the year 2000, which turned pretty much every Arab-Australian Muslim male into a sexual predator in Australia. And then you had in 2001 the September 11 attacks on New York City, which in addition to the sexual predator stereotype, turned us all into terrorist suspects. And then by 2005, with the explosion of the Cronulla riots, the Arab-Australian Muslim male, the LEB, had basically become a folk devil. He was a drug dealer, gangster, drive-by shooter. Then he was a sexual predator. Then he was a terrorist suspect, and so on. And so that's the world that Banny Adam, the protagonist of this book, is living in as a teenage boy. Now, one of the problems with the way Arab-Australian Muslim men are usually represented and constructed in the mainstream media and in the political language, in political rhetoric, is extremely simplistic. It's very one-dimensional. We only play the part of the terrorist or the sexual predator or the gangster if you look at the historical representations of us, not just in Australia, but around the world. And so what I wanted to do in the LEBs is not give an alternative point of view, which is necessarily positive. I wanted to give a complex point of view, which gives both the strengths and weaknesses in our community and what it meant to be a LEB. And so now, to get to your point on the question of contradiction, Banny has contradictory thoughts all the time because he is a complex individual. Sometimes he can think in extremely homophobic, misogynous, violent ways, and other times he can think in extremely liberal, secular, progressive ways. Sometimes he's quoting great poetry, but in other times he's using it to justify utterly absurd ideas like pedophilia between him and his older teacher. So it's a complex portrayal of what it means to be a LEB. And I like to make the point that his name Banny Adam in Arabic means child of Adam or humankind. And so I was very explicit in giving him that name because I wanted him to represent humanity, that and what it means to be a human being is a contradictory experience.
Yeah. Banny's experience is very much circumscribed by the context you've just talked about. And there's a scene the day after September 11, 2001, when Banny's school is called to assembly. It's actually his year group are called to assembly. And the principal offers a particularly closed-minded opportunity for the students to discuss the events that were even then being understood as history-changing. Emerging from the discussion, we hear perspectives about America's complicity in the violence that it receives. We heard laments for the invisibility of the peoples of Palestine who died daily but are not memorialized. There's this point about how the school is flying its flag at half-mast. And where is the sympathy? Where is the empathy for people that die every day in conflict? This isn't a discussion that we hear broadly, if at all. How did you begin this for your writing, and where do we go with this discussion?
So look, that would be one of the most complex and difficult scenes to comprehend in the LEBs. And it happens very early on because the book starts around 1998. By about 30 pages in, you're in 2001, and it's the day of September 11. Now, for me growing up in the western suburbs of Sydney, among a large Muslim community, the first narrative that I wanted to put forward, which is a shocking narrative to a lot of Australians, but we just have to get past the denial about the situation and actually speak openly about it. For young Muslim men that I grew up around, it was a day of celebration, and so I wanted to write about that openly and explicitly. I didn't want to sugarcoat how the LEBs, the boys that I grew up around, were feeling the morning of 9/11 when they woke up, they turned on their televisions and they saw those planes flying into the buildings. And so when they went to school, they did not in any way hide their emotions. They were going out of their way, in fact, to show the teachers, who were primarily white, that they were jubilant about the event, about the incident, about those crimes. And so this is how it flips, because I wanted to give both points of view. So on the one hand, there's this narrative about Arab Muslim jubilation in the face of this tremendous act of terrorism. And then on the other hand, what happens is the school principal, and this happened in my reality, this actually happened at Punchbowl Boys, and I write about it as a fictional account of what actually happened. The principal had put the flag half-mast. And then he called my year group in particular up to the library to talk it through with us, because he felt that our group was the main group who were expressing a particular kind of sentiment, which was distasteful, and he felt that he needed to talk it through. Now, this young boy in the book and in reality put up his hand, waited for a good hour to be allowed to speak, and finally he said that he felt there was a hypocrisy in the way in which the school expected us, who were primarily the student body, who were primarily Arab Australian Muslim, to mourn this event, but never once in the history of us being at that school did the school show any sympathy for the thousands and in some cases millions of people who are related to us and connected to us through our ancestry that had been slaughtered in this conflict of East and West. And so I wanted to give both points of view. I wanted to give the point of view in the book of the horrendous jubilation that those boys were expressing, but also some kind of context for why they were articulating the particular sentiment that they were expressing. And, you know, I think that this is the hardest point and part for many Australians to comprehend, that the events of 9/11 are not a one-sided account. They're not unjustified acts of hate and terror, as the Bush administration was pushing. It had a lot to do with a long history of imperialism, colonialism, illegal occupation and invasion of Middle Eastern and Muslim countries. And I want to give a balanced point of view of both in the book.
I am joined in the studio by Michael Muhammad Ahmed, and we are discussing his new book, The Lebs. We are going to take a track, though, and come back after it with much more discussion about the context of The Lebs and its impact in the broader culture of Australian writing. But this is something new from Not Good With Horses. I absolutely love this band. And If you agree with me, if you love the amazing stylings of Brielle Davis and Not Good With Horses, you can actually catch them this Thursday. They'll be launching their new album, Fault Lines, at the Brass Monkey. That's Thursday the 29th of March. They have even conveniently organised a long weekend for you to relax and rest and enjoy the new album. But to get that album, you've got to head down to the Brass Monkey this Thursday night. You can go to ngwhnotgoodwithhorses.com.au. But for now, this is What's Done Is Done from Not Good With Horses.
What's done is done. I never found what I was looking for. So know if I find you on down the line. Don't know if it's over or just begun. I give it all over and cause what's done is done.
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 That was What's Done Is Done from amazing Sydney band Not Good With Horses. You are tuned into 2SER 107.3. This is Final Draft. Now, if you like what Not Good With Horses, I love the band. I actually caught them at a secret gig just a week ago, but they are playing a gig this Thursday night, the 29th of March, at the Brass Monkey. Go to ngwh.com.au for all the details. Right now, though, I am joined in the studio by Michael Muhammad Ahmed, and we're discussing his new book, The Lebs. Violence is an ever-present aspect of Banny's life at school, and he observes but doesn't engage as his friends do in this violence, and he constantly reflects on the things that he had either seen or heard about. And then on leaving school, he takes up boxing, seemingly to exert some control over the violence he feels could be turned on him. Do you feel, and probably engaging with our previous question as well, do you feel like violence is something we can ever come to terms with in our life? It seems like Banny definitely struggles with that idea.
I think that there is a kind of misconception about violence in the way it's articulated in the West. You know, I mean, it's the concept of nonviolence, which was adopted primarily through this kind of romanticization of Gandhi, is that it's the only option in every single factor. Even and usually we see politicians, powerful white male politicians, articulating an ideology of nonviolence when you're protesting against the way they're behaving. But their behavior is extremely violent when you look at the way the United States, Australia, engage with the Middle East, for example.
It's sort of violence by proxy when they're sending troops.
To me, it's hypocrisy. But here's the thing, that if you actually look at the work of the civil rights leaders, which Banny is obsessed with and admires, you know, Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, they're the scholars that he's reading, because he's a reader and he's a critical thinker. And the kind of, putting aside the romantic version of who those people were, they actually lived extremely violent lives that, you know, like, Gandhi never actually said run away from a fight. He in his work, he was arguing nonviolence as the best way. But if it came down to being violent or being a coward, he said be violent and fight for your freedom. But then again, of course, like Martin Luther King, it was a nonviolent movement, but the amount of times that he ended up being arrested and the amount of times that they had to confront violent act and make sure that it was a public display, try to get your oppressor to act violently towards you to show the world just how horrendous the situation is a fundamental part of the civil rights struggle. And so for me, the idea of violence is not a scary concept. And and for most Arab Australians that I know, most Arabs, because we come out of a inherently violent context, a context in which our families or us directly fled a particular kind of violence, the idea of violence does not scare us. Generally speaking, I mean, that's a big essentialism, but still a fundamental principle that I wanted to explore in The Lebs. And so the characters in The Lebs are constantly playing out these fantasies of violence. And like I said earlier, Banny is a contradictory character. At times, he embraces these kinds of romantic ideas of Gandhi. And on the other hand, he actively pursues the ability to enact violence against other individuals. And he's constantly, in the book, he's constantly on the cusp of committing very serious acts of violence.
Now, I don't want to take us too far away from the areas that we've just been talking about, but I'm about to move us into probably my favourite part of The Lebs, something that weaves throughout the novel, and that is Barney's reading. You can't come on Final Draft and not expect me to have a few questions about his reading life. He's inspired by his teacher, Mrs. Leila Hami, and eagerly devours her recommendations as well as his curriculum and beyond. If I think back to school, I kind of wonder about the reading lists that I received. I accepted them. I loved reading at school. But also the way they skewed towards this established canon of literature. Do you feel like Banny and his friends, if they perhaps chose to read with him, we get no impression that they took any love of reading. Do you think they're served in their daily lives by the books that they're prescribed or would have been prescribed in sort of the 90s curriculum?
Yes, the answer is no. I think Banny is reading, and I go to great lengths to construct him as a reader, but fundamentally what he's reading is not necessarily empowering for him. It's, just to be really simplistic and blunt about it, it's primarily the language and the words of dead white men who have been dead for a very long time, and that's from like Shakespeare to Faulkner to Nabokov to Joyce. And of course, for me as a person who studied literature in university for 10 years, I devoured that literature, and I began at a very young age. I was reading the canon, the European literary canon, by the time I was in year 7. But he tries to use that language and to use the words of those particular writers, which is peppered throughout the book, as a way of empowering himself and disconnecting himself from the other lebs. But what he finds is, regardless of what kind of leb he is, regardless of how intellectual he is or how progressive he is or how open-minded he is or whatever kind of hippie terms he can give himself, there's something about him that is still fundamentally distasteful to the white artist that he tries to join at the end of, in the last part of the book. And so there is an interesting phenomenon that's been going on at the moment that we saw start to unfold when Jackie Lambie attacked Yasmin Abdul-Majid, because this was on Q&A about a year ago, about 2 years ago. But what happened was we saw the first time a very clear evidence that it doesn't really matter what kind of a Muslim you are, because those who know Yasmin Abdul-Majid, who have read her work and have seen her in the public sphere, but those who know her personally will say that she's one of the loveliest human beings you'll ever meet. And you know, she's dark-skinned and she wears a hijab. And Jackie Lambie still attacked her and you know, tried to humiliate her in front of the entire country. And so at a certain point, you come to realize that it's not the type of Muslim you are, that Islamophobia and xenophobia are real, that some people on this planet and in this country hate you not because of the way you're behaving, but because the religion you practice or the color of your skin happens to be wrong to them. And so what Banny starts to discover, I think, throughout the process, is that he's kind of reading the wrong literature for his empowerment. And what's ironic is that whilst I push him towards the European canon in terms of who he's devouring and thinking critically about, my doctoral research, which I used to write this book, was like radical black literature. It was the work of bell hooks' Malcolm X. And so whilst Banny is reading this kind of literature, the guy that wrote the book is reading a literature that looks to another part of the world and a different skin tone altogether. Mm. And what you get in the end is a kind of hybrid version of both in the book.
So a lot of rhetoric that I adopt, that I think passionate readers adopt, is the way that literature opens up worlds to us. It allows us to explore beyond ourself and perhaps realize, develop empathy. Reading is so terribly important to Banny, and you've touched on the way his reading is influencing him. It's an escape. It's a link to his unknowable future as a writer. But he also faces the harsh reality that his peers share little interest in this passion. I think we've complicated the idea about whether that's a good or a bad thing right now. But do books always get the readers that they need? I know that the writing you just mentioned for your PhD thesis, I'm familiar with. I read bell hooks. I haven't read the writings of Malcolm X. Do books always get the readers they need? And what are your hopes for the readership of the Lebs?
Well, let's talk about the idea of reading and writing firstly, because the book itself, for me, as an Arab Australian Muslim man who has been a silenced minority for most of my life, and is the experience for a lot of other young Muslim men growing up in Australia, is an act of self-determination. The ability to learn how to read and write a book, have it out there in the public, is tied into a concept coined by bell hooks, coming to voice, which is the act of moving from silence to speech as a revolutionary gesture. And so the work I've been doing with Sweatshop in the western suburbs of Sydney for the last 10 years has about has always been about empowering young people from culturally diverse backgrounds to come to voice. Now, in the autobiography of Malcolm X, which I professed to be some kind of expert in, though I'm not the definitive expert, but the narrative itself, the book itself, is pigeonholed as a conversion narrative, because the journey of Malcolm is one of transformation. He converts his way of thinking and his way of living. And the subgenre of conversion narrative is education narrative, because his conversion comes through education. And so if you look at the way bell hooks talks about the work of Malcolm X, she says what we see in the autobiography of Malcolm X is how Malcolm is charting his intellectual development through reading. And so for me, the idea of reading is transformative, because, and I want to quote bell hooks again here, the all steps towards freedom and justice in any culture are always dependent on mass-based literacy movements, because degrees of literacy determine how people see what they see. And so in Banny's case, reading is part of the process of him coming to voice, becoming critically conscious and becoming empowered. And that ties in with an ancient tradition of human beings transforming their lives and the lives of people around them, and in some cases transforming the world around them through literacy. And you know, Malcolm X is a very modern example of that. But I can go back even further. The Prophet Muhammad, his miracle is actually the miracle of literacy. And the Quran is seen as his miracle, because he was illiterate. He couldn't read and write, and then came down from the cave of Hira, from the mountain, blazing with this amazing poetry, which, for better or for worse, radically transformed the world forever. So this idea of the education narrative and the idea of the literacy narrative is built into the history of what it means for human beings to transform. And so I would, to answer your question now, I would say absolutely the power and the importance of reading, writing, combined with critical thinking, is essential to steps towards freedom and justice for any culture. And so in terms of the Lebs, who do I want to read it? If I was going to be optimistic, I'd say everybody. I want every Australian to read it. But especially I want members of my own community to read it and to feel empowered by it, not just by the story and the narrative, but by the idea that they too have a story that is worthy of representation, and that they too take it upon themselves to come to voice.
That is Michael Muhammad Ahmed. His new book is The Lebs, and we have been discussing it today on Final Draft. It is a thought-provoking book. I think it's a very essential book for Sydney, and it's a conversation that we avoid, that we haven't been having, a conversation that we need to have. We're almost at the end of Final Draft. Thank you so much for joining me again for books, writing and literary culture. Now, next week on the show, it is time for another Australian Classics Book Club. We will be discussing Moral Hazard by Kate Jennings. So go out and get a copy. Join us. Join in the discussion. The Vulture's Nest is coming up next. I'm going to have to say goodbye, but do enjoy your reading. It's a short week. It's a long weekend coming up, so stock up on books. Get ready to read. And I will see you again next week for more Final Draft. Bye now.